Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to a new redefining technology podcast. Standing on 2 feet, having dexterous hands, developing a language that allows us to communicate, and the ability to understand abstract concepts. These are all part of the equation of humanity. Still, it is the capacity to create tools and advance the technology that has allowed us to thrive on this planet, and maybe on others. Knowledge is power, now more than ever. Blue Lava is the first business platform for CISOs to manage their security program. Blue Lava guides security leaders to effectively measure, optimize, and communicate their security program with confidence and ease in one platform. Learn more at bluelava.net.
Marco.
Sean.
Have I told you about my new invention?
You have a new invention.
I'm
definitely curious, but I'm also curious about what drove you, what gave you the idea for your invention.
I have no idea.
Do you think there's market for that? Yeah.
I was inspired to create something, and I spent all my cash on it. And hopefully somebody will buy it from me and I can make my money back.
All right. Well, I'm curious to know what it is. Maybe you'll tell us during the conversation.
Maybe it'll today. Come out. We'll see. I haven't disclosed yet. If everybody listening signs an NDA, then maybe we'll share it.
That's another.
It's going to be hard to make money if I don't tell anybody what it is or how it works. But
that's another important thing. As we know in history, many times what they call the good idea, the good technology, didn't make it the market the way that the other did, because there is a lot of factor that comes in when you start a business, especially when it comes to technology. And Sean, this is an episode of our channel called Redefining Technology. And today we talk about the mindset of somebody that starts a business. And Sean, I'm going to let you introduce the guest and the connection that we have with them, with the new project that we're really loving right now.
Absolutely. So I'm thrilled to bring on one of the mentors from the Mentor Project. And we're having many conversations with a number of the mentors. And the reason for that is different people from all different walks of life. It's not just technology, not just cybersecurity. We're looking at all kinds of things that impact us as a society and helping the next generation kind of get a feel for what matters to them. What can they do? How can they do it? Why would they get involved in something? And if they don't know what's possible or available or where they might take something that exists now to the next level, what are they going to do? They're just going to stick in a rut. So I'm thrilled to introduce Neil Kane, who is a serial entrepreneur and has done a lot of things, which I'm going to ask Neil to share maybe a few of those and a highlight as he introduces himself. Neil, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. It's great to be here. As you've noted, yeah, I really self-identify as an entrepreneur. I've started more businesses than I can count. I think over a dozen the last time I sat down to try to catalog them. The first business that I started was actually making barbecue sauce, believe it or not. My grandfather had a restaurant in Chicago in the 1930s. And so some years ago when he was kind of, you know, late in life, I took his recipe and decided to bring it to market and make a product around that. Since then, I've done software companies. My specialty is taking complex innovations out of university research labs, basically the stuff that's, you know, kind of cooked up in a beaker by university professors, and starting businesses to commercialize that stuff. And more recently, I worked with an undergraduate student from the Illinois Institute of Technology who hacked a kind of a Rubik's Cube sort of a thing. We call this a twisty puzzle. and started a business to bring that to market. And I've been involved in batteries and air purification and just about everything in between. So a lot of different things.
So aside from the sauce, is mostly tech?
Good question. Well, the sauce clearly was not. And then this product.
Or was it?
there was no technology to the sauce.
Okay.
And this product called the X-Cube really wasn't much technology either. Although I would note that the way in which this was enabled, talk about innovation, only happened because the student had access to a 3D printer at his university. So he conceived it in his head. And even though the manufacturing of it is just a, you know, plastic thing, we never could have completed the design and we never could have conceptualized the product had it not been for very advanced technology, which is available today.
That's a very important point nowadays. We joke sometimes, Sean and I, on how everything is technology. I mean, look, even a sauce, even the grandma sauce is not made nowadays the way we used to do it.
Right.
Without technology. And if you want to think about that, even a spoon and a calderon, it was technology in a way, right? And hammer is technology. So Everything is connected. What I'm really interested to know from your experience in so many different ventures, what is that drives you? That was the question I asked Keating to Sean. Like, how do you pick one venture versus another? What drives you?
Well, you're assuming that I only do one thing at a time, and I'm not.
No, sure. I don't at all. How do you pick many?
Well, I wrote an article many years ago called "Do You Want to Be Rich or King?" And basically, the point of the article was, you know, what motivates you? Are you motivated by money? A lot of people are, but the statistics tell us that, you know, becoming an entrepreneur because you want to get rich is a really bad idea. And of course, we celebrate, you know, billionaire entrepreneurs. And of course, there are many outliers, but on average, it's not a great way to make money. And the truth is that even the entrepreneurs who've become extraordinarily wealthy, their motivations typically also was not making money. It's usually solving a problem. It's usually, you know, they were technologists and they saw a need somewhere or an opportunity. They were motivated more by the desire to want to work in a business or be their own boss. Money is usually the thing that happens when you're successful. It's rarely is it the motivator.
And I did a podcast the other day with the mentor for he's helping underprivileged, underserved communities. Kind of recognized that becoming the sports star isn't the only way to be successful. And so I'm wondering if in the context of having a mindset for innovation and being an entrepreneur, how do we, is that something that can be taught? How do kids understand that it is possible to be an innovator and to create things and to establish a business that is successful? And do we have to say you're going to get rich and be the king or queen to get their attention for that?
Well, there's a lot loaded in there. So I don't think that you can, you know, I say you can't teach entrepreneurship, even though what I do for a living is teach entrepreneurship. But I think more than anything, what you need to be able to do is teach kids some of the basics of business. Knowing how a business runs, of course, is not the same as being an entrepreneur. But if you invert that, I don't think you can really be a successful entrepreneur if you have no idea how businesses work or understand the basics of finances and marketing and stuff like that. So just as I say, you know, learning the basics of basketball doesn't turn you into Michael Jordan. You can bet that Michael Jordan spent, you know, a lot of time learning the fundamentals. So I think that's important. The other thing that I've seen a lot, especially at the college level, is a lot of students that I've had, particularly those who come from, you know, circumstances where they just haven't had a lot. A big part of what I think my job is to show them what's possible, remove kind of the fear and enable them with a sense of hope and possibility. And the people who succeed are the ones who, you know, are willing to kind of step into the darkness, right? They go forward and they see somebody else who's done it, so they believe that it's possible, rather than having an attitude of, well, I don't know where to begin, or I'll never raise the money, or who's going to give that to me, or how do I make it happen? If you let all of that uncertainty stand in the way, you'll never get anywhere. So I think a big part of being an educator, aside from teaching the fundamentals, is motivating students to just be willing to try. And one of the ways in which I do that is to show them, at least this is certainly true for students in college, is that there's no such thing as failure. And I don't mean that in sort of the pithy way. What I mean is that for a college student, if you start a business and the business doesn't succeed, chances are nearly 100% you still learn something that's very marketable in your career. So the dialogue I have with college students all the time is, go try this. If the business succeeds, you've got a business that you own. But if it doesn't, and you know how to describe what you've learned, on the margin, you're still much more marketable in the job market. And that argument I have found is really compelling for a lot of young people, because their motivation usually is, I want to get a good job, or I want to be secure. I want to do well in my career. And I believe that entrepreneurship is not just a destination for some, but it's a path to prosperity for a lot of other people.
Let's bring the technology aspect into this. As I mentioned at the beginning, you know, technology is part of pretty much everything nowadays. And based on your experience and all the company that you have created, and you said, you know, some are more technology versus other, right, a little less. But how do you feel that the role of technology has been evolving as it's been moving and changing, of course, really fast, exponentially? How do even the younger generation perceive, and what is the role of technology in maybe opening more opportunity,
yeah,
to people? I mean, how do you plug technology in all this?
Yeah, that's a loaded question too, Marco, but I would answer it in a couple of ways. So first of all, you know, unlike when I was a kid, everybody today embraces technology. It's much more of a fabric of our lives. And there's no such thing anywhere, you know, as a teenager or above who's not computer literate, right? If you have a smartphone in your pocket, you're computer literate to a degree, and you have access to tools that allow you to do things like market to a global audience, build a web page, build a mobile app, design things, you know, so the efficiency, you know, with which you can make stuff happen quickly and cheaply and then have access to a global audience is just unbelievable. Okay, so that's the first piece. You know, the other piece, like, again, with my friend, having access to these design tools and the prototyping equipment and all of that sort of stuff, all of these are enablers, even if the business isn't itself about technology. So a business, you know, so every business, we started off talking about food. You know, the food company, again, wasn't really a tech product, but there's no business today that doesn't rely on the use of technology in some way, even if it's just, you know, promoting a product through a website or a mobile app or on social media or whatever. You can't survive as a business unless you're literate in technology and know how to use it to your advantage.
Yeah, and I was wondering, do you see in your own experience or others that you work with that you leverage technology for, right, maybe you mentioned an example, I think, earlier, but to find new ways to build something? So you, yeah, can either build it faster, better. Do you find you use it to collaborate? So maybe you get more ideas. Right. How have you used technology?
Or even the investment, the entry, yeah, level to put money into a new, yeah, venture, maybe.
Yeah. I could parse this so many ways. I mean, one of the things that I spend a lot of time on these days, new technology, is blockchain, which is the underlying, you know, foundation for cryptocurrencies and things like Bitcoin. And it's just unimaginable the amount of money that has, you know, flowed into that sector. And so the technology has really taken off because, you know, there's a global audience, and the, you know, the tools are coming out now. And because companies can grow so quickly and become so big, you know, investors are literally just, you know, pouring money into the sector. So that's an example where a whole new technology that didn't even exist 10 years ago is now literally like a trillion-dollar industry if you look at the value of cryptocurrencies. It's unbelievable. And I'm not even talking about when I was a kid. I mean, you know, as recently as a few years ago, it wasn't even an industry, and now it's a trillion-dollar industry.
It's an interesting point because, as you mentioned, blockchain, heavily known for cryptocurrency, but used in a ton of things.
Right.
And I'm wondering, as an entrepreneur, how do you approach an innovation and a business? Because I know you can build a feature, you can build a product, you can build a solution, you can build a platform that enables many things. Do you approach something from that perspective, or how do you look at things as an entrepreneur?
Well, the best way to do it is you start out with a definition of a problem or an understanding of a need. That's not how everybody approaches it, but the best way by far is to begin with an understanding of, you know, the problem that you're trying to solve. And we work hard, and in fact, I co-authored a book on a topic called product market fit. And there's a number of techniques. People all over the world do this today, where you go out and you talk to your prospective customers and you try to become intimate with the problem that you're trying to solve through the application of technology. Okay, and if you can do that, and it's a lot harder than it sounds, then you stand a very good chance of bringing something to market that's really going to set the world on fire. Most of the time, people approach it like, hey, you know, another company that I started, we made a form of synthetic diamond. And as great as that sounds, and I'd love to tell you the whole story there, it started out as a science project where some scientists at the Department of Energy figured out a way of making a new form of diamond in a factory. And my job then was to figure out, well, what's that good for? It wasn't the kind of diamond that we use for jewelry, wasn't the kind of diamond that we use for like drill bits and cutting tools, areas where diamond is commonly used today. So even though we had a very innovative technology, talk about innovation, you know, we had like a dozen patents, we had everything going for us. It was still very, very difficult to turn that innovation into products that companies were willing to buy to solve a problem that they had at a price point that made sense for them. It was really, really very, very challenging.
At what point, because it, like you said, you can start from a problem solving, like, okay, we need that.
Yeah.
How can I resolve that problem? And what kind of technology can I use to do that? Or, as you just mentioned, here's a technology. What can I do with it?
Technology in search of a problem, right?
Right. So at what point, and I may get a little philosophical here, that technology, you realize that maybe it's just an invention. I don't want to diminish that, but at what point you establish, maybe there is not that value. Maybe it's not the right time. Maybe we need the convergence of another technology to make it work.
Sure. Well, again, at the end of the day, to succeed in business, you have to be able to offer a product or service that some market, which means people, you know, are willing to buy. And what happens a lot, especially in innovations that come out of research labs, is sometimes you get scientists just doing basic science, or they come up with something innovative, but it's not for any particular purpose, right? And so, trust me, I've spent a lot of time trying to push those things into companies where there just really isn't a solid, what we call value proposition, right? And so the answer to your question, Marco, is to learn the skills and the techniques to be able to evaluate the fitness of these, you know, new technologies and very quickly discard the ones that aren't going to work or aren't going to have the characteristics of being a successful business. A useful analogy would be like if you were a stock trader, right? You know, when you buy a stock, you don't just kind of wait forever to see what happens. Usually, and professional investors always buy a stock, you know, with some sort of price target in mind. And if they hit the price target, you know, they might double down or they might sell it. And they always set limits, you know, on the price going down, right? And you know, if price goes down 10%, they sell it. They don't make the mistake that amateurs make all the time of watching it go down forever. So this is what I've learned, is that, you know, innovation is sometimes it comes from an inspiration that happens because you have a problem. Sometimes it comes from a desire to want to help people, right? There's a lot of social innovators out there concerned about literacy or feeding people or global warming, right? I mean, every college age kid and below these days is worried about that. And so sometimes the inspiration comes from, I'm really concerned about this, that, or the other thing, and I want to try to find a solution to that problem. So that's where the inspiration comes from. But translating that into a business that's going to be sustainable, and I mean sustainability here, not in the ecological sense, but financially sustainable, right? Like, is it going to generate enough of a profit so it can employ people and it can stay as a going concern? That's still, you know, very, very difficult. And that's when you wind up becoming very analytical, and some of the magic of the inspiration or the creativity sort of wears off, because you can have something, you know, very creative or very inspiring, but it doesn't always automatically mean that you're going to be able to build a good business around it.
Or that it's a good product or service. And I was kind of joking in the beginning, Neil, that when I was playing that I had an invention that I'm not going to share yet.
Right.
So I want to talk to you a bit about keeping things secret or trying to push something to market quickly with a minimal viable product and sure. being a market maker and leading the market versus maybe seeing where things go, following analyst trends, or I don't know. So this idea of, do you create the market with a fully blown product, or do you test the waters with an MVP, or what are your thoughts on that?
I'm firmly a believer in testing the waters with an MVP is a great way to go, right? Because, you know, you want to cut your losses quickly, and it's automatic. It's always the case, you know, that let's say you have an idea for a new software product. If you just start coding or you just start building the product, chances are 100% that you're going to be designing features into it that people don't want. You know, the user interface is not going to be quite right. So in the old days, you know, people would come up with ideas, they'd write a business plan, they'd spend a lot of money, and they would launch something. Today, apropos what we were talking about a few minutes ago about the availability of technology, we iterate a lot, right? And so, like, you know, if you're doing a mobile app, I'm sure you've seen it on your phone. Some of the apps that I have, they get refreshed 3 times a week. It's nuts, right? But that's because we are in these cycles now where when things happen, like, you know, in March of 2020, suddenly we've got a pandemic and the economy stops. And you've seen, like, how some businesses were able to take advantage of technology, like those restaurants that immediately turned to mobile delivery, for example, and survived, and those that couldn't or didn't and failed. So, you know, there's an example of taking a shock to the system and using technology to be able to innovate your way out of a predicament. So iteration, making small bets, there's a lot of different ways that we can describe this phenomenon, but clearly that's the way we go about things today.
Yeah, if there is one thing that we can learn from that is exactly what you said, like how a business needs to be flexible, ready to change and leverage technology to do that.
Absolutely.
I often was looking at how we always think that the internet is taking away job from the real world, but in reality, with the delivery economy and the Uber and all of that, actually happened the opposite, where the technology brought job in real life. So you always need to be open to all of that. And with that in mind, and as we start like wrapping this conversation, I would like to pick your brain in what is your vision for the future? What do you see to be, you know, some valuable investment. I'm not asking you to do what you do next, but like in a more general way, looking at, I don't know, 20 years from now, 25 years from now, are we looking at focus on the environment, focus on sustainability, circular economy, or are we going to space?
Everything's just going there.
Wow. Sean?
I mean,
everything's blockchain.
Yeah. Even space, we're going, Branson is going to go blockchain in space.
Well, there's so many ways I could respond to that. I mean, I do think space tourism is a thing. It may take another 20, 30 years, but it's absolutely a thing. I've seen business plans for people that want to build colonies on the moon. And as we saw just this week, you know, we now have these reusable rockets and they're going to get the costs down to where it's going to become somewhat affordable. So that's a thing. Artificial intelligence is both the most amazing thing and the biggest threat, you know, that we face. It's just unbelievable what it's doing. And I've talked, you know, just in the last couple of years, talked to many experts who have said things to me like, well, a machine could never read an X-ray. You never replace, you know, doctors for cancer diagnostics, et cetera. And now suddenly all of those people are being proven wrong because AI is coming along so far. In the area of blockchain, decentralized finance, and I'm not an expert in this field at all, but I read the headlines every day. Some people think that just the whole way in which we use money and do commerce is going to change. You probably know, and this isn't blockchain exactly, but China is on the record now. They're going to launch a digital currency that's different from cryptocurrencies, right? We'll save that for another time. But they're getting away from paper money. And among other things, they'll be able to then, you know, if you're a conspiracy theorist, although there's a lot of efficiencies that could motivate that, it will also give the state an ability to know who's spending money. They can tweak interest rates to juice the economy or slow it down when they want. They can penalize people for holding money. They can reward people for holding money. I mean, the implications of this are just astounding. I could go on and on. I know we're out of time, but
The interesting thing there, Neil, is every one of those things has a gazillion things you can attach to it. I was just looking at the space, right? If space tourism becomes a thing, the economy and all the businesses that surround that.
Yeah.
I mean, you need food, you need water, you need entertainment, you want you want housing, you want clothing, you want... I can see, the trainers that make you run fast on the moon. Right?
Well, I'll close with this thought, and you've probably heard about the picks and shovels, right? But the way the story goes, during the gold rush of whenever that was, the late 1800s in California, you know, a lot of people went out there to search for their fortune mining for gold. And I'm sure some people were successful, most were not. And so it was a very, very binary outcome for a lot of people. But the people who made money consistently were the people who supplied the picks and shovels to the miners, right? And that's a strategy that a lot of people employ. If we were to talk further and come to some consensus and we said to ourselves, absolutely, space tourism is going to be a thing, I'm willing to bet on that. But I have no idea how it's going to happen, what technologies are going to happen, whether the United States is going to lead in it, whether China is going to lead in it, whether people are going to launch from Florida or Antarctica. I mean, you know, like, who knows? But you could still place your bets by not trying to pick the winners in the sector, but figure out what other things, like what Sean was just talking about, will become necessary once that industry takes off.
Yep. I love to end with this because it opened your mind, and it's something that people can understand immediately is if you talk about the airplane industry and how all the providers there are around an airport and who provides the food and the cleaning and so many other things. So I think that's a good way to open mind and end to a larger vision of technology. It's not just that one thing. It's
the
solar system around it, right?
Right. So consider this. You know, we've had train stations for, I don't know, 150 years. Airports, you know, now for 70, maybe 80 years. Imagine, just close your eyes and imagine what a spaceport might look like.
Yep. I was just thinking that, exactly that. And with that in mind,
Yes, I'm gonna take my mind to space and start thinking about that more. And I'm going to use this opportunity to thank you, Neil, for expanding our horizon on what we think about technology and innovation and entrepreneurship. And I think we're all entrepreneurs in some way, whether we choose to make a business out of the things we think about, want to create or not. It's all another thing, but don't feel like you can't. I think there's an opportunity for everybody here. I want to thank you, Neil, for sharing your thoughts. I want to thank the team at the Mentor Project for connecting us. And for those listening, we'll have links to links for ways to connect with Neil and perhaps even a link to his book and anything else that Neil wants to share to help you think about what it means to become an entrepreneur and have the mindset of an entrepreneur. So thanks again, Neil.
My pleasure. Happy to do it.
Blue Lava is the first business platform for CISOs to manage their security program. Blue Lava guides security leaders to effectively measure, optimize, and communicate their security program with confidence and ease in one platform. Learn more at bluelava.net.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Redefining Technology Podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.